That's a really important social justice question. So one way of framing Rabbi Akiva is he says, you know what? I understand that a reasonable principle for determining bullshit is how much would you be willing to pay to avoid it, which is how we view Tzara, say. Right? And we run that risk by Tzara, perhaps, that that way poor people, rich people can get their cakes by tormenting poor people. Right? We run that, right? And so, right? So we are, for example, we are willing to tolerate reality shows in which, right, people get prizes for sticking their thumbs on tables and having rich people bang hammers on them, right, on them until they scream. We're not willing to tolerate reality shows in which people are humiliated for money. Right? If you want to get a reality show in which people are humiliated, you have to pay the contestants not what they're willing to settle for, but what you would pay a rich person with a sense of dignity for the same thing. Okay, that's right. That's one way of framing Rabbi Akiva. Okay, Rob, what do you want to say?
So I was just wondering if basically we're saying that instead of being an objective amount of money, that's basically like a percentage of one's assets or a percentage of one's income?
We could do it that way. Or Rabbi Akiva says a simple way of doing it, because he needs administrative predictability, is, you know what? We have a baseline, and nobody can go below that baseline. And right, but if above that threshold, we can do it. Right, that's right, that's
wait,
right.
Rabbi Akiva is going... Wait, so are you saying that Rabbi Akiva is relating to the cases beforehand?
Rabbi Akiva is saying, so long as the kavod meets, right, or akol tiyam v'yesh meet v'yesh, right, but only above a certain threshold. Right, because we're not, it's bad social policy to ever allow people to humiliate other people for minimal cost.
Is that threshold the one we set out beforehand in the cases beforehand?
We don't know that.
No, sorry.
Could be. Could be. Rabbi Akiva is saying everybody gets at least that, right? But I don't know the answer. I'm not bound to that. Good. Very good. I'm not bound to that. Okay. I'm not bound to that. I'm just right now. We're just doing mission. Okay. Right. You're all right. You all know right. The only going position that you can do chat and drash in Mishnah. You know, I don't like it in Chumash. I like it in Mishnah. that the Gemara is doing drash and not chat. There's validity to learning Mishnah against the Gemara, because there's Jad also. Okay, Talon and David.
It seems that we're reading to know a lot about the Mitzvayish. I wonder if you could read it in terms of the Mitzvayish. That is to say, when a poor person humiliates you, that's even more humiliating because this poor person is effectively saying, you are below me, and that's the effect of humiliating, whereas if a rich person embarrasses you, then, well, okay, you know, he's a rich person, he thinks of you as inferior, but that doesn't really reflect any truth. Or the reverse, that when a rich person embarrasses you, everyone looks up to the rich person for the standard, and so now you're really humiliated, whereas if a poor person embarrasses you, so who cares? If you're the poor person, then no one cares what he has to say.
Right, so I think you're interested in saying we read the word Kvodo that way, but actually the real point I'm making, I think, is that whether Rabbi Akiva, when he says Ro'ino Tov, is he talking only about the Mitzvayesh, or only about the Mitzvayesh, or both? Right, I assume that he was talking about the Mitzvayesh. Right, but Rabbi Akiva could be talking about for example, if you think that being embarrassed by poor people is trivial to you, the answer is no, any Jew who embarrasses you, it matters.
That doesn't look like the story.
We haven't got the story yet. okay. Yes, sir.
So from a quick Bar Ilan source of Bnei Chorin in Tanayic literature, it occurs 26 times.
Uh-huh.
About half of them are Nechatim Bnei Chorim in contradistinction to Nechatim Meshubadim, and the rest of them are Bnei Chorim in contradistinction to Avadim.
Okay, so these questions stand as of now, until we have an alternative. No, we don't. I don't currently have a meaning of Bnei Chorin that means something other than non-Evit, and until we do, then these questions stand. I don't have a good answer. And it's my fault for that, because I thought of it and I didn't research it beforehand. So I owe that one.
But I think reading it in context of the whole thing makes sense, that we spoke about what's boshet for an Evid, and then Rabbi Akiva says that the boshet of an Ani can never get so low as to say we would call it boshet.
I understand the
level of boshet for an Evid.
I understand the reading.
I think it's a reasonable Havamina.
It's not an unreasonable Havamina. It doesn't satisfy me, but it's not an unreasonable Havamina. But again, right now I'm not committing to anything, so it's fine. Yes, Rachel?
Just to look in the Deshra, he mentioned sort of the biblical Hebrew word chorin meaning nobleman. I don't know doesn't really have any relation to the
biblical
okay. Hebrew, but maybe. I mean, if you read it that way, it makes a lot of sense. Like, they're just noblemen who are down.
Bnei Korim is the same thing as Bnei Melachim.
It's
an economic בין מלאכים כן, אז נראה אם יש באמת מקום כזה ואם אפשר לומר שהמשתמש בביטוי זה בביטוי במשהו זה עכשיו כאן לא יודע אבל I have suspicion שכן I think it's probably so okay okay so here, right, so here the only thing I have to add, I think, to this conversation, which I think Tovia was based on, allowing you to say it, is the it's Amar Rabbi Akiva as opposed to Rabbi Akiva Omer. Right, so that's right, that sets up that if he's not responding to a person, right. So usually, right, the rule of thumb, right, is that Rabbi Akiva Omer is the Cholek, Amar Rabbi Akiva is right is the comment. The exception to that is if you're responding live to somebody else, someone says this, I'm going to give a but. Here, there is no live person, so it's easier to read Rabbi Akiva if he is not disagreeing. Because of that, because the MR precedes the name. Okay. Good. Maseh bechad shefarah rosh ha'isha b'shuk. V'atalat ne Rabbi Akiva, v'chivo liten la arba me'aduz, amar la Rabbi ten lizman, v'atal lizman, שמרה עומדת על פתח חפירה ושבר את הקו בפניה ובו כיסר שמן גילתה את ראשה ואתה מטפחת למנח הידו על ראשה העמיד על העדים ובא לפני בקי ואמר לו רבי לזון אני אתן אבא מייזוז אמר לו לא אמרת קום okay לא אמרת קום is not the most informative right, statement about a position he didn't say anything okay so why not okay so we have a case right the case is Pashut, right, the case, Pashut is somebody commits the wrong of being Porea Rosh HaIsha Pashut, and he is sentenced to an amount which at least an earlier line of the Mishnah has seen as standard, in some sense. And the person then claims that you cannot use the measurement of how much she would pay to make me pay her 400 zuz, because we see exactly how much she would pay. She would pay Kinisar Shemin. Now whether he wants to make, whether that acceptance standard just says, look, this woman can't have an injury worth 400 zuz for, right, to her dignity because she has no dignity. Right, however you frame it. Right, that's some version of the argument is made to Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva rejects it. But he doesn't say why. Perhaps. Okay, as of now, all we know is Rabbi Akiva says, Rabbi Akiva says that position is incorrect. Then we have a line. HaChovel ba'atmo afu pi she'eino rashai batur, acherim shechavlu bo chayav. So, all right, let's see. Yair, so what does that line mean? HaChovel ba'atmo
We read it that you're not allowed to hit yourself, but if you do, we don't penalize you for it. Penalize you how? So, later on, when you eat at the thing, no? Good, so let's write down, stop right where Pashut Yidden. Just studying Mishnah. So, what is the traditional, whatever the traditional punishment is for being, for Kabbalah in general?
You have to pay damages to the person
yeah,
who called
them. Yeah, so you can't pay. So we thought either you can't pay to yourself, and that's what I was saying about George. It's just obvious. That would be one way to read it. And the other is to say that you have a certain authority over yourself. We don't want you doing it, but it's not the same. It's not that it's you.
So the word Rashai is an interesting word.
Yeah.
Okay. What word would I expect?
Mutar.
What?
Mutar.
Or Asur, Asur.
Ah, right. I would expect Asur, Asur, but right? But we don't know. I think it'd be worth running the search and see how often the Nevar Shai shows up in the shows up in the Mishnah. Yeah, right, to see how significant this is. So Chovel Batzma Apopisha Nevar Shai Patur, and then try and figure out right whether we want to read Patur as the, or Patur as even though in fact there was something we could be Mechayev him. Right, which largely means that we pay, right, is it talking about money, in which case it's, right, which makes, it makes sense, it's obvious, or it's talking about malchus, in which case it's not obvious. Although you can have the suggestion that he's patur from paying other people, namely his family, for the injury he caused them. But others who wound him are chayav. So, let's talk about, what's the havamina? I'll give you a case. Okay? You, right? You. Right? What's the havamina? Why do I have to say this? Right? So let's. Right? Pardon?
You have to pay yourself.
I mean,
I was going to say that you hurting yourself and someone else hurting you are on the same level or the same offense.
So let's take the case. Okay? I decided that I wish to look cool in bars, so I take a dueling sword and I cut a scar down one of my cheek, right, because I wish to look cool. Regrettably, I am a century behind the times. I do not realize that horrifying dueling scars are no longer, right, are no longer attractive. But, you know, sorry, I live in an Orthodox culture. I'm not really current. I will drive, you know, with my dueling sword, I will drive up with, you know, in a big car with tail fins that get 2 miles. They get 2 miles to the gallon. Wearing bell bottoms. Now you say, oh look, the clapper just cut himself a dueling scar on his cheek, and you walk over with your dueling sword, and you open up the other cheek. Now what's the havamina of your patur? Because I did it, you can do it. Now, what does my having done it relate to your having done it?
Well, I don't know if we want to go here, but if we've been putting this all into the context of one's possession of oneself,
yeah.
Then I might assume that really you damaging your body has nothing to do with you doing something to your own possession.
Right.
I don't know.
Right, so I understand why it shouldn't work. But what's the avenue that does work?
I think it's a complete thought and it's connected to the previous statement, which is...
I don't know if it's the previous statement. I just want this statement. What
no,
is this
it's
statement?
Context. In context.
I don't want any context, though. I don't want what this statement
is. Say it's just a complete thought out of context, right? You hit yourself. Right? And so it's like, oh, this guy's a masochist. I'll help him. And maybe it's an idea that you are moja to everyone else that you're not...
Okay, good. So we have two different theories, actually, by saying, right? You have... Right, you have a function that says that since I did it to myself, obviously it's not worth anything to me to avoid it. So the concept of damages, right, the question of whether I want you to do it or not, or whether I give you permission to do it or not is irrelevant. Because all we're measuring is the amount of damage. It might very well be that I would much prefer not to have another scar on my cheek. But I can't say that I would pay $10 to avoid having another scar on my cheek, because look, I just did this to myself. Right? All it does is measure it, right? So one model is that the havamina is that by having done it to myself, I show that avoiding this is worthless to me. The other model, which is what Deirdre suggested, is that no, what I've essentially said is that I don't mind it. It's not that it's a worthless injury, it's not an injury. Okay, those are two very different positions. Okay, either anybody want to say that, Elliot?
I mean, I'm not sure there's anything that's leading us to believe that this case of Acherim Shechavlubo here is in a case where he had just done it to himself.
Sure.
Where this could just be a straight up comparison of whether you're allowed to do something to yourself in general, what other people do things to you in general.
So the Acherim Shechavlubo is just a generic statement. Other people injure you are chayav.
Yeah,
right,
absolutely. And yes, it's stating the obvious, because I think it's Rabbi Akiva talking in an illustration.
Wait, before we get to there.
I know, I'm just saying, like, to say that it doesn't mean anything...
So
right?
Does this line not tell me that Does this line not tell me anything about the, about whether I can injure somebody who has already injured themselves?
Nothing that's not, nothing that, oh, right, it doesn't tell you about that at all.
Doesn't tell me that, right? At the end of this line, I could still, it could still be the case that if in fact I, right, if in fact I've injured myself in some way, you are then entitled to injure me in the same way.
No.
Without,
it could be, but I doubt it.
Why
no, it's something I'm not allowed to.
Why are you so interested in reading it like that?
Why am I interested in reading it that way?
Because it really doesn't seem like shot.
Okay, Elliot, what do you
what?
Want to say?
I was going to say that
what?
I think the second reading that is very, actually very compelling. Because we already have the statement in the end where he says, if you're mocha and someone hits you,
oh, you're reading, I don't have that statement yet.
But I'm just saying that it's...
in context, it works like that.
That we already have the idea that if you want something done, it still counts.
Where?
Later.
Nope. Okay.
Then that statement becomes problematic, and then you have to deal with that.
Good, we will. We're going in order, mysteriously enough. Roy, what do you want to say?
I was going to say, I think that in a shot, if you just read that line alone,
yeah.
Then it's just coming to give the chiddush. The chiddush is afal pi she'ein rasha shei patar. I don't really need a mishnah to tell me a chayim shechavu bo chayavin. That's pshita. So there's a poetic just because teaching this taught that as well.
It's not poetic.
Yeah, it's not poetic. There is a memory tool. Now other people are chayav, but despite the fact that other people are chayav, you're puzzled.
Okay, so there's a bunch of people who actually like this reading of this mishnah line says nothing whatever about the question of whether I can injure somebody who has already injured themselves in the same way.
I just don't. Like, what? Why are you insisting on that reading?
I'm not there.
No, on your reading of someone who's just injured, themselves. I don't see that.
Not
it doesn't make sense.
Oh,
it doesn't seem to shout
it
out.
Yeah, but
what?
It's context.
Okay, I think Rabbi Akiva knows the halacha, and Rabbi Akiva is saying,
you're saying in context of the story?
That Rabbi Akiva knows the halacha.
Well, I was setting up to ask the question of whether the story is the context.
Okay, but first of all, even within the story, the Chavala Atzmo, whatever happens after he did her. For all we know, that's the first time she's ever...
Very good. You're getting ahead of me. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
So the results of Eino Rashai, a large number of uses of Eino Rashai are of the form Afal Pisha Eino Rashai Patur, and the phrase Afal Pisha Asur never occurs.
Okay. So then not so significant. Okay, yes. Rob.
So I actually prefer the reading that there is a Havamina. I personally like Deirdre's Havamina, but either one. One of the reasons is if this was just a mnemonic device, the structure that we have, since we have another statement of the same form already, you would have to make the claim that that the second half is unnecessary in both this line and the next line, and possibly also in the last three lines, first two of the last three lines in the Mishnah. And that just seems like a lot of unnecessary things to put in for something that already has an internal rhythmic structure. You could say, Hachov Abbas Mo'af Al Pishen Rosai Pater, or Hachov Tzitzin Eotav Al Pishen Rosai Pater. Like, that would work perfectly mnemonically, and therefore I think there has to be some significance to what the Acherim means.
Okay. Good. I think that's not a bad argument. Yes, right.
I disagree with your reading of the language. I think that it'd be impossible. You can't say something... Pater as opposed to what? As opposed to that which is chayav. That's a very common. I've seen that many times before the Mishnah. The pater as opposed to this other thing which was chayav. It sounds like a very common.
But
it's
just too obvious.
But the other thing is that I think that the other thing I wanted to mention is that it looks like this is a pre-existing halacha that Rabbi Akiva that is stuck in here. Either Rabbi Akiva is saying it's even the din or he's not saying it's even the din. It's a pre-existing halacha stuck into this Mishnah. But then, it comes to show why Rabbi Akiva says Walmart.
Well, we're going to get to that in one moment. I was wondering right, whether it's the next Rabbi Akiva or not. You did your last comment.
I think the fact that Acherim Shechavlu Bo Chayav, right, it definitely is an obvious statement. There's no way you can get around that obvious statement, the fact that it's an obvious statement, except for the fact that it comes, right, it's useful if it's being said by Rabbi Akiva in this context.
Right.
Okay. Good. So let's pick up on that. Now the question we have is, how is this connected to the previous line? So you want to defend the proposition that it is connected, that Rabbi Akiva, when he says Lo Amarta Klum, right, he then says the reason Lo Amarta Klum is because of this halacha.
Right.
Okay, and that in fact in the parallels, right, in the parallels you have this little shin. So you want to write, and if you read it that way, then you have to say that the taina of the other person was, as Rabbi Akiva understood it, was that this woman is the equivalent of a chovel ba'atzmo. At that point you run into Daniel's objection, but she has not been chovel ba'atzmo previously. Right? So it's not like you're repeating an injury, you're just, right, you just have after the fact evidence. So leaving aside the question, but now Rabbi Akiva's response to him could simply be, well, guess what? You know, after you tore her kircher off, she discovered it wasn't so terrible, so she went out and did it again. Right? Beforehand, she would have given a ton to avoid it, but she figured everyone's already seen her hair anyway.
But isn't it, it's just...
I think he's just saying, we see that there is a fundamental difference between doing things to yourself and doing things to other people.
Good, so Rabbi Akiva doesn't read it that way, right? If Rabbi Akiva is quoting the Talakha, so Rabbi Akiva is saying that no, he thinks that fundamentally, just because you would be willing to do it to yourself, doesn't mean that other people are patur. Now we actually, right, now that, there are three ways of parsing that. One way is, just because it's not worth anything to you to avoid it, doesn't mean we charge you for it. Two is, just because the person gave you permission, doesn't mean that gives you permission. And three is, just because you would do it to yourself doesn't mean you're willing to let somebody else do it to you.
There's the third, the last two.
One is, just because, right, just, I would let you do it to me, so what?
The last one is,
I do it to myself, that doesn't mean, right, I would let you do it to me, right? I find it's much less than that, right? There are lots of things I'm willing to do to myself I wouldn't let you do.
Like brush your teeth.
Brush your teeth is painful. Right. Say, you know, Rabbi. Rabbi sits on his. Right. Rabbi sits on his hands until blood comes out of his fingernails while he's burning. Does that mean other people consider his hands as blood? Hard to believe. Yes, Susan.
So if we start all this by establishing that there's a relationship that's important to bear in mind, which is between the one who causes the embarrassment and the one who's embarrassed, then can we apply that here, that, you know, it's not just about the action, the guy punching him in the nose, but it's very much contingent upon who's doing what to whom.
Well, it's not. Because even if I tear the kerchief off somebody who has no objection to appearing in public without a kerchief.
Right, no, but what I'm saying is, like, that it wasn't... The woman could tear it off herself, so it wasn't the action. It wasn't the action of tearing a kerchief off. It was the fact that it was done by another person to her,
yes.
And what the effect of that relationship is on it. And maybe that's what, when Rabbi Akiva says, lo amar tchum, that it's not about the action, it's not about the fact that the kerchief was torn off, but it's about the fact that you tore her kerchief off.
So you know, if you're like my third reading, that it's, right, that just because she would do it to herself doesn't mean it has the same valence as you do it to her.
Right, because we already established that you have those two people, and that's part of how we determine.
Okay, so interesting. So you're reading, whereas most people, I think, would read a kolotet v'yesh v'mit v'yesh as opposed to Rabbi Akiva, right? Because, right, that, which meaning that if you have a person who doesn't care so much, then it's less. You're saying no. The whole point is that if you have v'yesh v'mit v'yesh as opposed to doing it to yourself.
Well,
right? Or an intimate person doing it to you as opposed to someone you don't know. All that's right. What Akiva is saying is you can't judge it without figuring out. That's an interesting reading. That's a very interesting reading.
If you think about it, like, you know, someone coming up to a woman in the marketplace and tearing off her head covering, there are all sorts of levels of embarrassment there aside from the fact that her hair is uncovered. As opposed to if she, like, takes it off to, like, pick up oil, or, you know, if she's holding a child and the child accidentally pulls off. Right? Like, those are different levels of embarrassment.
Okay. No, I think that's a very interesting reading of the way of putting them all together. Elliot, do you want to say something before?
My question is, why are we so quick to jump on the connection that this is Rabbi Akiva saying it? Because that, even though it could make sense, like, it does make sense conceptually, I have a problem with the fudging of the bullshit versus Nizikin lines here. That in Tachoga B'atzmo seems to be talking about just you're not allowed to damage someone else. Well, Rabbi Akiva was only talking about bullshit.
I agree with you. The reason that I wouldn't be tempted if it weren't for the parallels in which it's explicit.
We just assumed that Boshet was implicit in Chayav. Chayav says all of the damage is attached to this injury, and that would include Boshet, and the fact they didn't differentiate is a riot.
Could be. I'm open to that. I would be with you, Elliot, if it weren't for the Sheh. But since I have all these parallels which other people interpret, which assume there's a Sheh, so I once there's a Sheh, there's no choice, so I'm forced into it. And you can decide at the end that you don't, like, you would prefer to find, if you can find Rishonim who don't have the Sheh and interpret it that way, then you're right. Then you like those visions because that makes more sense in the Mishnah. That's why when I indented, right, I push it all the way out to the right as opposed to a subsetting Rabbi Akiva, because I agree with you that if I didn't have the parallel text, if this were the only text I have, there would be no reason at all to connect with Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Yes. Ryan and Rob.
I'd like to say something. I think that I'm not sure if we are assuming this or it just hasn't been said explicitly. That the interaction between the Nidon and Rabbi Akiva, I think there's like a conceptual distinction between what is Boshet. Is Boshet, I think that when the Nidon comes in, he says to him, look, this woman obviously does not mean Bayeshet when somebody takes off her hair covering, and he's assuming that Boshet is a subjective thing that changes from time to time, Lofiyam is Bayesh, Lofiyam is Bayesh, blah, blah, blah. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, Boshet is an objective thing. It doesn't, you know, Walmart Taklum, Boshet is an objective thing. And this is consistent with Rabbi Akiva's statement earlier, which says that, you know, it doesn't make your economic saying doesn't make a difference, etc., etc. Obviously, the other things, you know, the Boshet is like an objective thing that we don't.
Okay.
Right.
All reasonable reasons. I think there's many, many reasonable reasons. Yes, Robin and Danny.
So if you choose to have the Gersa without the Sheh, then perhaps they are so far disconnected that Hachova Ba'atzmo should be pushed to the right even more. And referring back to the very first, the beginning of the chapter, Hachova Bechavero, you have all these different
absolutely
things,
right,
and then you could have a separate section of Hachova Bach.
Absolutely right. Structurally, the easiest way to read this is that we have a whole section which begins with Hachova Bechavero, and then a new section which is Hachova Bach, which is unrelated to anything that happened previously.
Right. The only thing I don't like about that, though, is the Hachova Bachmo section isn't quite long enough. I assume this is the end of the parak here, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's not quite long enough to balance out. That's my caveat.
Okay.
But
good. I am very comfortable on the shot in the Mishnah level saying that I think is absolutely correct. That in perspective, Achovel Be'atzmo is as opposed to Achovel Be'chavero, and that tells you that this
right
is in fact the opening of the
otherwise Mishnah. It just feels like a non sequitur.
Yep. Absolutely. But you know, that goes with Elliot. I agree with you both entirely. The only problem is that I have Sheh.
Right.
Right. So I have to deal with that. Not in the Mishnah, but apparently others have been in the Tan, and probably in the Gemara. Okay. That is connected to the line of a kote nitiotav afishin rashai patur akerib shikat patur nitiotav chayavim. We will have to address the question of whether that sets to what degree that tells you that there is an equation between the Isser of Kabbalah Be'atzmo and the Isser of Kotes Nistiotav. The Isser of Kotes Nistiotav is the primary location of the Isser we call Bal Tashkit. And the question is, does that tell us that Kabbalah Be'atzmo is Bal Tashkit? Is it telling us that here's the starkest way of saying it, right, saying our factor axis is there's no difference between your body and your property. Right, that's what the purpose of this is. No difference. In fact, there's so little difference that right even after I've already said you can't be a Kovel Begufcha, I still have to say
I mean, yes, it may be that there's no difference between your body and your property, but at the same time, we're putting restrictions on your property that we wouldn't have thought.
Sure. Right. I can't do anything with my property, I can't do anything with my body, but it doesn't affect the question.
Right, but then going back to the question before about whether or not your body is your property, again, we still end up with a situation where even if we say that your body is your property,
those
restrictions are significant.
Sure. Baltashka is a real thing. Baltashka is a real thing. So, if, for example, you can only do yourself grievous bodily harm if thereby you are intimidating your household. He must be a tough person if he can keep doing this. With that hammer, I don't want to mess with him. all right. Ta'omer Sameit Eni Kate Yadi Shaberet Ragli Chayav Amanat Listor Chayav Krat Suti Shaberet Kadi Chayav Amanat Listor Patur Asay Kevishpon Amanat Listor Chayav Bein Begufo Bein Mamuno. Okay, so this parable becomes somewhat more complex because in the last line of the last unit of the Mishnah we do make a distinction between body and money. We have to understand why is that distinction, why does that distinction apply here when it doesn't apply in the previous case. Here we seem to have, right here we move from a case where at least we have three possible cases, let's say, four possible cases. One case, right, one reading is that the first line, the previous line of is not addressing the question, it's just talking about an ordinary person and doesn't address the question of the masochist at all. Okay, let's bracket that for the moment and assume it does. So now we have a set of cases. One case is that I explicitly give you permission to do this. I say, please come punch me in the nose, or please throw a pie in my face. Okay? A second stage, a variable that is, I don't actually ask you to do it for me or even give you permission, but I place myself in a situation where I reasonably expect you to do that, i.e. a boxing ring. Okay, right? Or a food fight. The third possibility is that I state nothing whatsoever, but I do the same thing to myself in advance. I take a pie and throw it in my face, right? And so I'm now wandering over custard over my face. That actually divides into cases where you're doing the action and it doesn't inflict any different kind of injury on me. We understand there's a difference between throwing a second pie in somebody's face and taking somebody's second kidney out. Right? Even though, hey, he gave one of his own kidneys away. Why can't I take them? So there has to be limits.
Very, very
similar. There has to be limits. No, I understand, so kidneys, is an extreme case, but some they need. Right? If somebody blinded themselves in one eye, blinding them in the second eye is not the same injury. Right? Because you can't be king even in the land. Right, even the land of the blind anymore. So I have to be careful about exactly what it means to inflict an injury on somebody who has already self-inflicted the same injury. And then you have another case, which is where I didn't give you any advance permission. I did nothing in advance to indicate that I did, either that I was unconcerned about this or that it was not worth it to me to spend any money to avoid having this happen. But after the fact, we discovered evidence that I didn't really care, that it doesn't really affect me so much. Right? After the fact, we raised questions as to whether in fact you were injured. Which can have all sorts of, it could be, let's say if we discovered said woman in the McDonald's case, regularly thereafter, walking into the car with cups of boiling hot water in the hopes that she would accelerate rapidly and spill on herself. She'd probably discover that she actually enjoyed the experience. Right? So no one in advance would reasonably expect people to enjoy having that selfie stolen them. But who knows? What if that had happened? This happens with certain types of food. Where if you have to force it down your throat, any reasonable person, but then you develop a taste for it. I won't mention any specifics. Seeing as I have actually grown to enjoy dry wine.
I think you weren't going to mention any
specifics. So I'm much more open-minded about this now. I appreciate it now, I really do. That happens, right? But I might argue that for an average person, having dry wine forced down their throat, right, an actionable sort. until they've acquired the taste.
Then retracting myself.
Right, so that's a set of cases. And looking at the structure of the Mishnah, you have to figure out, right, so the last case it's talking about is the case where you give permission. We don't know if there's an explicit treatment of any of the other cases, nor do we have an explicit theory underlying it. The issue ultimately that is going to matter to us, right, all that, when we're done with three days going through all the sugyot, or 4 days even, all that's going to matter to us really is what this tells us about the halakha of klavel d'atzmo. But we have a whole set of issues. We have to talk about what are the halakhic parameters of klavel d'atzmo. We have to talk about how does klavel d'atzmo relate to mashkit mamonel. We have the question of how does klavel d'atzmo relate to mevayesh atzmo. Both of which have implications for the broad axis of whether the question of whether chovel batmo is mutar tells me anything about the question of whether I own my body. Because if it turns out that chovel batmo is asur in the same way that chovel mamono is asur, it tells me nothing. Because my body can be my possession the same way my body is, and so it does. Right, I gain nothing by the comparison. And if I say that chovel batmo is asur in the same way that mevayesh atmo is asur, it's hard to claim that it relates to ownership of the body. Because nothing of God's possession is damaged. Right? To say that God owns my kavod, I don't own my kavod, right? That's a very different claim than God owns my body. So what's going to matter for us is, A, what is the halakha for each of these? And secondly, is it mashma uti? Is it significant what the halakha is for these? Because maybe the parallels will establish to us that the attempt to reach broader conclusions from the halakha of chovel batmo is mistaken, and chovel batmo actually does not connect to the question of whether one owns one's body. However, we should also say that even if the halakha of chovel batmo is not connected to the question of ownership of one's body, it may still be connected to the question of how much autonomy I have with regard to my body, because my autonomy can be restricted by specific halakhot, just as it can be restricted by a broad theory. Right? For example, right? If it turned out that we had a statement which said, you own your body, but you have a mitzvah to heal yourself, right, which overrides all other values in your life, right? So if it turns out that as far as God is concerned, for example, you can sell yourself into slavery without the slightest issue, right? Because there's no issue, right? Because that's not an issue, or whatever else you can. You can humiliate yourself endlessly, and you can even inflict endless suffering and pain on yourself. Right? It turns out that we just know technically the halakha is that you can spend all day just putting bamboo splints under your fingernails, right? And locking yourself in chambers and only one drop of water on yourself, or even hiring people to waterboard you, right? But that has no impact on your life expectancy. But halakha is that you have an absolute chiyuv to heal yourself, right? So we still end up, right? We might still end up in the same position regarding informed consent, even as we reject the entire theory. So we have to know, and you have to know what the halakha, right? We have to know what the halakha is. We have to know what the connection between chavala and boshet is. We have to know what the connection between chavala and hashkata is, right? And then we can move back to the question of informed consent. Let's end it here for the day.
We'll be off the air in...